Welcome back to Radicalize Me, a show where we watch the world burn and then we get in there and rescue as many people as possible. That's right, we're going full anarchist, baby. If you're new to the show, allow me to back up for a moment. I started this show 40 years ago in April 2020 as a way to expose myself and my listeners to the activists and organizers on the ground who could tell us what we should be doing. Right, we want to go beyond the voting booth because the fact is, even in normal times, you get to vote a couple times a year. Right? By all means, vote. Do everything you're permitted to do in this society to have your voice heard. But I got tired of hearing nothing but vote, 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 when our problems clearly go much deeper than that. So, whether you're working for a group like Sunrise, pressuring elected officials to act on climate, organizing unions, marching in the street, or, you know, disseminating information as an independent journalist or advocate or podcaster, there's a whole slew of ways you can get involved and get out of the asinine back and forth arguing about voting or not voting or voting third party or shaming fellow voters or defending your vote to your fucking uncle or whatever. That shit's not getting us anywhere. Do the thing, vote, make a good choice, then get to work. After 4 or 5 months of interviewing activists, here's what I've learned. Our system sucks. I knew it sucked, but it's bad. It's real bad. And all this voting talk seems to ignore the reality, which is that the Republican Party in this country have gutted the Voting Rights Act. They've gerrymandered the shit out of congressional districts. They've passed unfair, racist voter ID laws. And we know for a fact that a contractor hired by Governor Jeb Bush's office wrongfully listed thousands of black voters in Florida as felons so that they couldn't vote. Read The Best Democracy Money Can Buy by Greg Palast for more on that. P-A-L-A-S-T. He's a fantastic investigative journalist who you'll never see on CNN or any of that shit. But that's what fucking happened. And we all know what happened in the Democratic primaries, too. So, I don't really consider Biden or Trump to be legitimate candidates. That said, for our goal of getting Trump out of office, I'm willing to temporarily see Biden as the legitimate president if he wins. But Joe, that's hypocritical. But shut up. So I don't understand how people look at this completely broken, dysfunctional, fraudulent voting system and just say, vote, that's how you do things. I've lost faith in the system. Like fully. Not only do I think Trump needs to go, and not only do I think Biden is not going to solve anything except maybe buy us 4 more years, but I don't believe in the power structures of the U.S., if some semblance of the U.S. is going to continue to exist, which remains to be seen, this is what I think needs to happen. First, we need to abolish the Senate. And I know that sounds like a wild idea if you've never heard it before. It did to me not that long ago. But once you really understand what the Senate is and what it does, it becomes clear that it's an unnecessary and undemocratic obstacle to popular change. So senators were not popularly elected officials until 1911. Yeah, state legislators elected their state's U.S. senators until 1911, which is when they ratified the 17th Amendment. Seems like a step in the right direction, but think about this. Congressional representatives represent people. Senators represent land. The number of reps your state has depends on the population. Every state gets 2 senators, no matter what. Rhode Island and California each get 2. Wyoming and New York, 2. Congress is the people's house. The Senate is the ruler's house. All right, look to the UK, who never put a euphemism on it, and they still call their upper chamber the House of Lords. So that should give you a clue as to what's really going on. Now you might be thinking, that's all well and good, Joe, but Congress isn't exactly stellar about representing the will of the people. Well, you're right. And that brings me to my next point, We need to abolish money in politics. If you publicly fund elections and abolish all outside money and lobbying, you'd see shit shape up mighty fast. It wouldn't be perfect, but we'd be in much better shape. If you want a representative democracy, let's start by putting the power in our representatives and incentivize them to do what we want and need them to do. Next, I'd like to severely limit the size and scope of the president's power. It's ridiculous the presidents can just do anything now. They can go to war without congressional approval. They break up protests. They appoint fucking business criminals to the, like, all the important cabinet positions. It's fucked. You can find examples of these problems in most of our presidents, especially in recent memory. And obviously Trump is more cavalier about it. So it's only going to get worse from here because he's set the new presidential precedences. Before the Constitution and Bill of Rights were enacted in 1789, U.S. law functioned under the Articles of Confederation, which is different. Under the Articles, the U.S. had 8 different presidents who served short terms and basically just got to sign off on legislation that Congress passed. That's the America I want. Simon Whistler at Today I Found Out has a great video about this on YouTube called The Many U.S. Presidents Before George Washington. Check it out if you want to learn more. He knows more than I do. All right, so we have a figurehead of state and a powerful representative Congress and maybe a judicial branch. I honestly don't know shit about courts, so I won't really go there. I do think that, if anything, the Supreme Court justices should be elected positions, and they probably shouldn't serve life terms. But this would be a start, okay, if we were going to radically reform our current system. However, I've become more and more skeptical that representative democracy is even the way to go. Stay with me. We're still giving undue power to an elite group of decision makers. Trademark pending. I think that the best goal and path forward for humanity is to work towards a leaderless anarchist society. All right, I said it. Stay with me, please. I know it's a scary word, but that's really all it means. What the monarchy is one ruler, oligarchy is a few rulers, anarchy is no rulers. Actually, I came up with the term recently, omnigarchy. It means we're all rulers. And a friend helpfully added, what if it was panarchy? That way, it actually kind of sounds like the word. Doesn't sound insane like omnigarchy. And that just tells you it's a more horizontal structure. But maybe the word's a little less scary than anarchy. A cooperative society. I'm not able to explain it completely here right now. There's a fucking interview to get to. But I will direct you to a great YouTube video, 10 Things Everyone Gets Wrong About Anarchists by Thought Slime. But Joe, how would that even work? Has this ever even been tried? Again, I can't answer every question in this intro. That's already way too long. But yes, it has been tried. Look into the anarcho-syndicalists in Catalina during the Spanish Revolution of 1936, the Zapatistas in Mexico, the Navajo and other First Nations, and basically any pre-agrarian society. It can be done, and I kind of think it's necessary for our survival to at least try, to at least aspire to it. I'd like to keep the agriculture, of course, you know, I like to eat. I'm a vegetarian now. I eat a lot of rice and tofu, and both of those require agriculture. But there's no reason for hundreds of millions to go hungry, which they are right now. All right, I want to read something here, and I saw this in a meme, and it was there was no citation or anything. So but I did some searching. I traced this to a blog called Lion's Roar: Buddhist Wisdom for Our Time. And this entry is called The End of Ice. And this was written by Haley Atwood. And I just want to read this part. The single biggest thing I learned was from an indigenous elder of Cherokee descent, Stan Rushworth, who reminded me of the difference between a Western settler mindset of I have rights and an indigenous mindset of I have obligations. Instead of thinking that I am born with rights, I choose to think that I am born with obligations to serve past, present, and future generations and the planet herself. All right, so society has existed and still exist. They've been put in an unfortunate situation by our society, but they're still here, and that's how they think. And you know, they lived on this land for much longer than we have so far. And it seems like it might have been better. You know, I don't know. They didn't bring the planet to the brink of collapse, so maybe they were onto something. So that's where I'm coming from. I just see no need to continue this carnage, and I will do whatever I can to help us get to a place where it's fucking history. So how can we be a little more anarchist in our day-to-day lives if we don't live in one of Bill Barr's anarchist jurisdictions? Well, the most immediate and possibly most helpful thing you can do is to donate or volunteer with your local mutual aid group. All right. These are like loose organizations. They basically collect donations and then provide services that the community needs. So like I've been shopping and delivering groceries to people in my neighborhood who can't afford it. The organizers just reimburse me when I'm done. Easy as that. And you're helping people and building community. I'll try to put a link in the description where you can find mutual aid groups. There's a few places where they're listed or, you know, but yeah, I think most of them are on Twitter. So just go to Twitter and search mutual aid and your town or city. And most places have these, I think. And they're very active right now because a lot of people need help. The state is not coming to save us. You know, I am a socialist in many ways, but that I'm finding is still it relies on a sort of a statist mindset still. And you know, I'm not telling you to go out and overthrow the government. The state is not coming to save us, so we need to do it ourselves. Okay. So with all of that out of the way, let's finally get to the interview here. My guest this week is Claire Kennedy, a podcaster and activist with a unique approach, who I think you're really going to enjoy. All right. After this, make sure you go listen to the Claire Kindness podcast, C-L-A-R-E, Kindness podcast, where she shares good vibes and more methods to improve the world around you. Enjoy. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yeah. So it was funny because I joined that KidCaster site, and I was looking at it as, you know, a lot of like entrepreneurs and stuff like that, which is fine, but it's not really what my show does. But I saw that you were, you said you were an activist. And it looks like from your website and everything that you do like a whole bunch of different things. How would you describe your kind of mission?
Yeah, well, I totally look up to all your guests so much because they're doing so much good in the world. And I was thinking, like, how am I an activist? Because in my mind, I totally think of myself as an activist. But let's see. I have a giving circle. It's called Dining for Women. So I don't know if you know the group Dining for Women, but we basically get together and potluck it up and talk about groups around the world that are helping women and children in developing countries be pulled out of poverty through education. And we learn about the groups and we donate the money we would have spent going out to eat. So I feel like that was the first thing that got me into activism, and that was probably 14 years ago we started. And then with 45 entering the office, I feel like I was totally galvanized to do what I could do in chipping away at what the administration was doing. So I feel like when 45 entered the office for the first time, I started like ramping up my calling Congress people, going to Move On, signing every petition that was coming my way. I was getting newsletters from so many organizations, and I went to the Women's March, and I was like, this isn't okay with me, and I'm going to make my stance known. And I've been doing a lot on social media, but with the newest election coming up, I feel like what I've been doing isn't enough. So I feel, and then the Black Lives Matters protest, I feel like money is such a huge thing I've been learning about recently, and all the money since the pandemic hit, like all the big box stores and corporations are getting money. Yeah. And all these little businesses are like going under and like, help us. So I feel like in the past I've been saying, oh, I'm not going to give my money to Walmart because they don't share my values. I'm going to shop at Target because they give back to the community. But now I'm like, that's not enough. Like, right. I need to take my money from them and give it to the little businesses and farmers in my community. So it doesn't seem that radical, but for my way that I've been existing, I feel like it's radical for me to not go to what's the very cheapest and the most convenient, but to give what is going to make me feel good. And I think it's going to be good for our community.
Right. Yeah. Which is kind of radical in this, you know, time and place, because there's been such a turn the other way for decades, where to the point where it's hard not to like do the most convenient thing. And then like a lot of people do just sort of weigh like, Target seems less bad than Walmart, I guess I'll go there. So yeah, it is a radical thing to really like look into that stuff and make those tough decisions.
I know like statistically women control like 80% of the household's finances. So for moms and young women and young men to take their money and say Amazon is awesome because I can get my package delivered like within hours.
Yeah.
But there's like a small business owner in my town that's Black family owned, and there is a couple dollars difference. Like for me to support them, I think it's a win-win-win. So when Bezos entered the pandemic, was it a billionaire and he went to a trillionaire? I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, or he's close at least. Yeah.
To shift the needle. So I feel like it's not terribly like earth shattering if I do it, but like if like a billion of us do it, it's going to be like, whoa, this is not where we want the world to be going.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm curious about your like women's group, because that's the sort of like, because there is like big world activism where you're like protesting and diverting money towards small businesses. And, but there's also like community building, which I feel like a lot of us are not so good at. So mm-hmm. I'm curious as to like, were these people you knew before, or like how did that start?
Oh, so I was in bed reading one night, and I think it was a magazine like People or Real Simple. And it was just this teeny tiny paragraph, like talking about this woman that for her birthday, instead of getting presents, she asked for her friends to donate to a nonprofit in her name. And she was a nurse in North Carolina, and she got like $800 towards this group. Wow. And then she said, oh my God, this feels so good. I want to keep it going. So she started Dining for Women. And I feel like it's impacted me so much, because I had this little tiny bubble I was living in, and I was like, oh, this is the world. And then kind of like slowly opened my eyes, and it's talked about refugees in Jordan or women in Afghanistan trying to get education, or girls in Africa who can't get an education because they're on their periods and they can't go to school. It's like, hello, like, I'll never forget. I watched this documentary called A Walk to Beautiful, and it was talking about women in Ethiopia who they're getting married off as young girls and getting pregnant, and their bodies aren't meant to be pregnant. So the baby gets stuck and the baby passes away, and there's all these health problems for the women. And it's like, there's no hospital within like 1,000 miles from them. So it was just like, I mean, we learn about a different program every month, but in addition to that, they do like a sustained program. So I just feel this connection to women around the world. In every meeting, we say a little prayer, like to our sisters and brothers around the world. And I think it's like really neat to do activism that is like social. So you get together with your friends and hang out, but you're also doing good.
Yeah.
And I feel really fortunate. I live in San Luis Obispo, California.
Right.
And we have the neatest mayor, where she like finds all these really neat ways to bring us out. So when ICE was capturing families at the border and putting them in cages, you feel so helpless in San Luis Obispo. And then she brought the whole town together in the park downtown, and all these families were like selling cupcakes and painting faces and writing postcards to congresspeople. And it was just like, this is how I want to spend my time.
Yeah.
And it was doable and it was positive. And yeah. When I was growing up, we had this mayor who was okay. He was a good guy, Dave Romero, but it felt like so removed. Like I could never talk to Dave, but her, she's on social media. She does like bike rides around the town to get kids and families riding bikes. She does, like just informal meetings at the mission. She'll go down to the plaza by the water fountain and talk about legalizing pot. It's like the way she is the mayor is just like, oh, I feel so lucky that she's our leader.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's great. And that's the kind of, I guess it's rare in like a mayor or, you know, anyone in that kind of leadership position. But, yeah, that community building stuff again is sort of a radical thing to do when we have just been driven into our own little spaces by this society.
I feel there's, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, go for it.
I was just going to say there's a lot of cynicism, like, oh, politics is a nightmare. Like, there's nothing I can do. My vote doesn't count, so I'm not going to do anything. And I'm like, you literally have to, because if you're not voting, it sounds like white privilege, like it's not going to affect you, so don't vote. But literally, like in the past, people would like give their lives to be able to cast a vote. And around the world today, it's like people could wait in line for a day or two to vote. It's like such a little thing, like the amount of time it takes you to like go to the bathroom, it will like take you to go in San Luis Obispo and go vote. I'm like, go vote.
Right.
But I mean, it's getting horrific for some people in America right now to try and cast a vote. So yeah, if you're in a place like San Luis Obispo County, put the effort in. It's your civic duty, and people would kill for that right.
Right. Yeah. I think it's weird because there's sort of, like you're saying, like a point where you're privileged enough that the outcome doesn't affect your immediate life very much. There's also like people who are in such a dire situation that it doesn't affect them either, because it's like, well, it's either, you know, it doesn't really change anything.
They're in survival mode.
And it's, yeah. And it's, I can understand why some of those people would say like, you know, it's not worth my time to go and do this and miss work hours and whatever it is. But, yeah, those of us who can and, you know, whatever, I think everyone should do everything they can. So, part of that is definitely voting. And it, even if it's, you know, the, not so ideal Joe Biden over a full on fascist, you know, I'll take the time. I'll take the 10 minutes.
Because we have to get Trump out. We have to get Biden in. I know I was kind of heartbroken when Warren dropped out and Harris and Booker. I was so excited because I watched his documentary Street Fight, and I follow him on social media. And it's like, he's doing so much good. He's a vegan. He's trying to live on minimum wage to see how people can survive. He's trying to reform the prison system. Like, we cannot have prisons privatized for profit. And the more people we get into jail, and the shittier food and the least health care, the more money people get. That's that's not okay. And Booker had all this good stuff. And Warren is brilliant. She's strong as hell. She's compassionate. Sanders, oh my God. I was like so emotional when he was like, it's not my year. I was like, okay, I loved Biden when he was the VP for Obama. And I was like, followed their bromance. And I was like, so much goodness. And now he's our president. I'm like, I have to vote for Biden. I don't know. Like, when things started happening, like he's saying these things and I'm cringing and I'm like, oh my God, this is like,
I think someone like Biden,
gotta get Trump out. I mean, just for like a million reasons.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I go back and forth with that a little bit, but like, yeah, I've come to the realization that, like, you know, I don't think voting for Biden knowing that he's not great isn't inherently bad. I think that can just be one of many decisions that you do in a process of like trying to make things better. And if we have what we have right now, then like, yeah, you know, take what you can get at the moment. I think people really get too bogged down. We talk about this on the show a lot, actually, how people get too bogged down in I don't want to give him my vote. And it's like, we should have a new party and this and that. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, why not vote for him and then spend all your waking hours like trying to get other like Green Party candidates elected or something, or anything where you write Joe Biden a letter every day if you want him to do different stuff. I don't know. Like, it's just people are tearing their hair out over it. And at a certain point, I'm like, I think you should vote for him. If you're not going to, you don't need to keep saying it. Just go do something.
It's maddening. It's like, okay, well, if Biden and Harris or Biden and Warren or Biden and Sanders as a team and you get them in, like, that is so much better than what we have now. So it's just maddening. It's like,
right. It's going to be a fight. It might as well be a fight against a less oppressive person.
Yeah. I don't think Biden would like put his energy into building walls and put tear gassing innocent protesters and taking away women's right to choose. I just so strongly believe there's so much at stake. And when I have, I work at a computer software company. So when I have coworkers say, oh, like the election's already been decided, my vote doesn't count, I'm like, what if everybody said that? You have to vote.
Right.
You shut your mouth if you're not going to vote.
Right. It's been decided because people have decided that they're going to vote for one person or another or not vote or, you know. That's what's been decided. Like, they don't have to just let it fall as it may.
I've tried so many ways to think about how to talk some reason or sense into a Trump supporter, and I literally can't. So I'm trying to think about people who haven't got out to vote before, try and like convince them to shut it down. When the election happened in the last cycle, I have a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I was so excited. I said, honey, go to bed, because in the morning we're going to have our first woman president. We're going to have ice cream for breakfast. So get excited. In the morning, she's like, can we have the ice cream now? And I was like,
yes, but for a different reason. Now it's to make us feel better.
I was
better.
So sure she was going to win. I was so sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess a lot of us were. Beyond all that, so you're Claire Kennedy, but you go by Claire Kindness on your website, your podcast, right? Is that kind of your stage name?
Yeah, it was because I wanted to start writing about kindness and inspiring people to live with kindness is a focus of their lives. And I had a website called Oh, These Are the Good Old Days, and my friend was like, no, that is impossible to remember, so make it something shorter. But now I'm thinking The Kind Activist might be a better title, but currently it's Claire Kindness. And I'm interviewing them to see how kindness has influenced our lives and how they're spreading kindness in the world. And a lot of them are activists. And my friend Aaron Gomez is on the city council in San Luis Obispo. And he was just talking about how he's making San Luis Obispo carbon neutral by 2035 with Heidi and Andy and the rest of them. So when Trump pulled out of the Paris Accord, I was like shocked. And I was like, I don't understand what's happening. I'm so upset. But then I realized if he's going to like represent us and pull us out, but like every state and every city says we're still going to like put all of our efforts into fighting this problem. So like in San Luis Obispo, we are changing our electricity, the way we get electricity. We're like giving benefits to people that are eating clean, and we're outlawing straws and styrofoam. It's like, okay, like he can say that, but we're going to do what we can and overwhelm.
Right. Yeah. Like signing that paper was never going to make or break it to begin with. And obviously like we should just be part of the like global agreement, but like, yeah, it's, you know, it's unfortunate that we don't have a very unified country. It's very big and spread out, and there's a lot of different cultures within it. And we have these like states' rights values that are, you know, really archaic and stupid in a lot of ways. But we can sort of use that to our advantage and, you know, have it be where, like you're saying, different local areas can do everything they can. Hopefully overall, you know, with most other developed countries doing mostly the right things, I think there's a chance. We have a chance.
Yeah, my brother studied international law in France a couple years back, and he was getting immersed in the culture and saying, oh, you just go to the hospital and have a baby. You're not like riddled with debt after. And when I had a baby here, I had insurance and it was like thousands and thousands of dollars. I was like, how do people do this? And then I was a young adult and I got to go to Spain and Italy and France. And my friend wandered into a bachelor party and slipped and cut her knee open and walked into the hospital and got sewed up and walked out. It was like, you don't become bankrupt and your life is over a medical issue in Europe. So,
yeah, it's so crazy. I moved to Massachusetts last year, and I lived in Pennsylvania before, and I was on, you know, their version of Medicaid in Pennsylvania, and it was a nightmare. Like getting anything done was like horrible. And here it's like, you know, there's some limits on like, you know, what my doctors can prescribe and like where I can go and stuff. But mostly it's been like nothing costs me anything. That, you know, I have like a comprehensive like facility I can go to where I can see every specialist I need to. And, you know, my prescriptions are like super cheap. And I'm just like, this is so much better. And this is because of Mitt Romney's plan in Massachusetts. Like, you know, I know there were like the ACA went through like a complicated process where it was made even worse than it was going to be, but like, yeah, on the state level someone was able to do this, and it's just crazy to think that like, yeah, this is how it works in most places, whereas the reality all around this state and throughout the rest of this country,
mentally and emotionally and physically draining to have to go through. Like, people that need healthcare probably work a few jobs, probably have kids, and to sit down and try and find the right doctor. Like, I tried to find a psychologist and psychiatrist, and the amount of hours I had to put calling, no, I'm not taking new patients. No, I don't take your insurance. It's so exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you get to, you know, you get to a point sometimes where you just say like, all right, I'm just going to pay like whatever insane amount of money to like go to some place where I'm going to pay out of pocket. I still have debt from like a couple of years ago having some health issues where I just couldn't get anything done for me.
It would be so incredible if we could put mental health care as being like, what's the word when you're preventative care? Because if people have a mental health crisis, which I did twice, it was like, I ended up going in an ambulance to a hospital, to like a mental hospital, and it was like 2 years to pay that ambulance off. And it was like, if I could have just get something before the moment of crisis, it would have been amazing. And I went in my office. I said I worked at a computer software company. I started a club at my office, a kindness club. I wanted to invite people to participate in activism in a way that wouldn't take much time and wouldn't take any money from them. So one of the things we did is we fed the clients at the homeless shelter. And it was like, people that are in my family that are older can think, oh, this homeless people are crumb bums. And honestly, like, one guy had a motorcycle injury and he lost his home. He lost his business. Some car hit into him. His life is beyond repair.
Yeah.
Financially. And then another guy was a painter and he was painting a 2-story roof and he fell off, and he was there at the homeless shelter because he couldn't keep up with the bills. So, yeah, that could use some attention in America for sure.
And then, and that's a great thing you just said, is that you gave people a way to participate in activism that wasn't going to take up a lot of time or money, because I think that's what goes through most people's heads. I want to do something, but I don't have time or money. And then that's it. So
I for sure feel like if someone got me the resources and the prompt to do it, I would be happy to do it. So someone in my office brought in postcards and said, oh, let's write to the troops on a postcard and say thank you. And it like literally took seconds, and we all got together and sent off like 50 postcards. And one of the things I did was signing cards for kids that are in the hospital. And it was like, it didn't take you any money to sit down and write that card. And you're putting out goodness into the world. So we did, I mean, like, it's a computer software company that we started as a little company that was a school project on the Cal Poly campus. And then it evolved into CDM Technologies. It evolved into Tapestry Solutions. And now we're Boeing proper. So I wasn't sure if Boeing wanted me to talk politics at work and all that. But the first thing I did was, when the Pulse nightclub shooting happened, we decided to get together, do a pizza fundraiser. So I did cupcakes with rainbows and rainbow Gatorade. And I was like, let's support the victims of Pulse. And then when the natural disaster hit in Puerto Rico and Houston, like, I started doing these little things like, you're going to eat pizza for lunch anyways. Let's like put our money towards supporting. And I'm kind of like testing the waters. I don't want to be too radical where they'd shut it down. I just want to be enough that.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's the struggle working within a system like that. But I guess Boeing might have some interest in like military related things, but it probably doesn't bother them if you're like helping hurricane victims.
Yeah. I was surprised when the Black Lives Matter protest started happening. A lot of time was devoted to being anti-racist, and I feel like in the past it would be too taboo or uncomfortable to talk about, but we've put a lot of time on the clock to learning and unlearning, and I've been pleasantly surprised with that.
Yeah, there's at least like a raising of the floor a little bit, I think, because the company I work for too is making an effort to, I teach music, and they're making an effort to like teach the kids more music by Black musicians, because like it's a rock focused music school, and like that rock music all came from Black people and Black culture. So that's an effort they're making. I think they're gonna try to like hire more Black people, which is definitely a blind spot for them. It's the amount that people or the amount that like companies can get away with has raise a little bit. It's like, you can't do less than this. So like that's got to count for something.
I I'm trying to think what I was going to say about Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. We live in San Luis Obispo, which is pretty liberal, pretty compassionate, smart, educated area with the college here. So I work in San Luis Obispo, California, and then I live in North County, which was 30 minutes away. But it is shocking what the politics, San Luis versus North County, and this is crazy to say it's a political issue, but 95% of the people have masks on in San Luis Obispo. And then that target in San Luis Obispo, masks. And then the one in Paso, maybe 20 or 30% of people were wearing masks. Wow. And I'm really torn. I love where I live, but I don't love the things that I'm seeing. And I'm seeing a lot of signs in San Luis that say Biden 90%, and then 90% of them in North County are Trump. It's like mind blowing that even one person could vote for him and for the whole town to have Trump sign. I'm like, why? Yeah. I keep trying to like reason and get facts, and it's just so emotionally driven for people. It's like they'll like use swear words to describe the opponent. I'm like, no, but why Trump? It's like,
yeah,
so I don't know why.
At the very least, I'm surprised that there's not more like what I see on the, you know, the left, the center left, whatever it is. I see a lot of people who kind of feel like I do, which is like, I'm not excited about Joe Biden. I'm not super into that guy, but like, I'm going to vote for him. And I'm surprised there isn't, and maybe there is, and we just don't hear about it, but like, I'm surprised there isn't more of that on the other side where it's like, look, I get what's going on with Trump, but like, I'm a Republican and these are my values. Like, it's like, there's a lot of like fanaticism about him still. And that's pretty scary, actually.
I'm so curious, like, could it be religion? Like, you don't believe in abortion, so you're voting? Like, that could be one reason. Or maybe, like, you think you're going to get more money in your family if you vote? Like, I'm trying to figure it out. And compassion is a big thing for me. So when he started pulling children away from their families and putting them in cages, I tried to appeal to their empathy and say, is this okay with you? They're like, they shouldn't have come here. And I'm like,
right.
You think someone would put themselves through that unless like gangs were threatening their lives or their lives were at stake, where they're like a family passed away in a river trying to get to freedom to survive. And it's, I just can't understand it. Like,
yeah. And oh, sorry. Go on.
I don't understand it.
Yeah. It's wild. And I think especially now with the Portland protests with the DHS agents coming in now, what I keep hearing from Trump people, from, you know, right-leaning people is, they have a right to defend federal buildings. Like, oh, well, the protesters set fires. Oh, they threw stuff. They did this. And it's like, do you realize that there's always a rationalization? Like, there's always, you know, whether it was Hitler or Stalin or whichever authoritarian in history you want to mention, there's always some story like, yeah, but they did this. And that is supposed to justify the whole thing.
No. I don't believe that protesters that are protesting for Black Lives Matter are the ones that are doing graffiti or burning buildings down. I feel that the mothers and fathers and young people that are saying we want to live, we don't want to be killed anymore, those aren't the people destroying buildings. Those are anarchists and looters and rioters. That's like a small percentage, and it's not fair to the message and the protesters, some closed-minded people are shutting down and saying, I won't listen to their message because this happened, and it's so unfair.
Yeah, I think it is probably a small percentage. I want to defend our anarchist listeners, though, because I think anarchy is often, anarchists believe more in like a collective like cooperation. So like the anarchists are the ones like providing the medical care and like water and protection and stuff at a lot of these things.
Bringing the milk to people getting tear
gas. Yeah, yeah. So, I think people, like, anarchy is like a phrase that's thrown out there a lot, that like, and they just mean like chaos. But people who are like, I am an anarchist, are actually like helping a lot of the time. But
thank you so much for clarifying that, because when the first tweet started coming out saying defund the police, my mind kind of went danger, no police, the purge, blah, blah, blah. But when I started reading articles about what that means, like police have the burden of like maintaining peace, but also all this other stuff. And the defund the police wants to take the onus of mental health away to help in the schools, blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh my gosh, this makes sense to me now. So defund the police makes complete sense to me. So thank you for...
Yeah, yeah. I think it's one of those...
like,
it's one of those misconceptions that's really deep in our, culture.
But I was going to say that in San Luis Obispo, we have a lot of activists, but it's like different than in what's going on in Detroit and DC, where instead of the police tear gassing everyone, in San Luis, the police are like kneeling with the people and shaking hands and having back and forth. And then like Deanna Cantrell, our police chief, wrote a letter to everyone before the Women's March saying, I'm on your side in solidarity, blah, blah, blah. So it's, we should be on the same team, because when people are hired into the police force, serve and protect, not murder and torture and humiliate, like serve and protect. I feel a big like miscommunication when I say defund the police. People think I'm anti-law enforcement, and I took criminal justice in college, and I think I'm super passionate about criminal justice, and I want I want what's just painted on their car, serve and protect.
Right.
Yes. So I don't want them to add to the trauma of like a rape victim or a sexual assault victim or someone who's having a mental health crisis. I don't want the police to add to the trauma. I want them to protect them and get them through it.
Right. Yeah. And it's also just a matter of like you said a minute ago, like just too much, is being put on the shoulders of police officers. So even if you think all of them are good people, it's like, well, they're severely over relied on for a lot of different things.
But I think there's things coming out. I follow a lot of activists on social media, like Sean King, and now this. It's like things are coming out where police officers are flashing white supremacist signs, or the tanks will have like graffiti that's like a known white supremacist group. Like, no, zero tolerance. Like, get them out, keep them from ever getting another job again. And when they're on film getting pleasure from hurting somebody that's innocent and laughing about it, no, zero tolerance. It's not, oh, send them to the police station 30 minutes away. Absolutely zero. Right. We cannot tolerate.
Right. And that's the problem too, is that it's a whole system that protects and buries these things, because
I completely go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, like the white supremacy side of it, I mean, yeah, that's not I don't want to say it's like all cops, obviously not, but like that's not like a super unusual thing in policing. And it's, you know, it's not something that will get people fired a lot of the time, and at least not fired from policing for good. It's just there's a whole history in this country that people kind of forget about, and that this is like a continuous through line from slavery to today. And it's not just, oh, a couple bad ones got in there. Like,
I think so. I have a lot of respect for police officers, and I strongly considered becoming a police officer when I was child free. I thought this would be so neat to be able to serve the community and help people and protect people. And maybe 2 weeks ago in our town, we had a gunman on the loose, and he went into the sheriff's station and shot somebody in the face. He fled. He shot another person down by the railroad tracks and killed him. I think he was a jogger, a walker, a civilian. And then they were trying to find him for like a day and a half or 2 days. It was like this manhunt for this guy. And he shot two more officers in the leg. And it brought all these people in our town saying, see, all the people that are saying defund the police, this is what you want. No one on the other side of 911 when you call. Like, no. Those officers that had to deal with that person, I don't want to do that job when I have two young girls at home. I'm so thankful to have you, but that's not what we're saying. It's not exclusive. It's not either or. So I was frustrated seeing people using that. And he did have schizophrenia. It was a young man who had not been able to get mental. He not able to get the medicine for what he was suffering with. It's been a crazy season.
Yeah. It's a wild year. So on your podcast, sounds like do sort of a similar thing where you just talk to activists doing different types of work in different areas. Is that about accurate?
Yeah. I mean, my first guest, she's a really neat person. She's into like nutrition and wellness. And I thought my show was going to be kind of like a family and anyone can listen to. And in our interview, I found out that she was, she exchanged sex for money, and she had struggled with drug addiction and all this stuff. And pretty much every episode since her, it's been explicit on my little iTunes. It's like, it's pretty much grown up topics, but, I have talked to, her name is Lindsay Ross. She's incredible. She's like a beach body coach. And when I think of beach body, I have the stereotype of like a person, what they look like and what they're about. But she's like one of a kind, and she's a must follow for, taking care of yourself. Because I've struggled with that. I've tried to be a good person and say, my focus is taking care of others, but then I don't take care of myself and I'm not good at taking care of others. And it's like, the past 5 years of my life has been a huge wake-up call in that regards. But I got to talk to Polly Conway, who I grew up with, and she's an editor at Common Sense Media, which they kind of, I don't know if you know Common Sense, people can go to their website and say, oh, is this movie good for my kid? Reasons why. Because rating system is kind of, what's the word? There's no rhyme or reason. Like, there's this kind group rating movies. But their company will say, like, this act of violence happens, this sexual assault happens, so you're not shocked.
Right.
She's helping people navigate raising kids in a digital world and talk about bullying and, sexual predators and all this stuff, which I'm kind of – well, my daughter's 7. It's kind of, like, in my mind right now. But – who else? I got to talk to Todd Parr. He's a children's author, and he's such a neat guy. His books are like New York Times bestsellers, and they're these simple little beautiful, happy, colorful books. And it's like, families come in all shapes and sizes. My family has two dads. Some families have two moms. Some families only have one parent. And some, he has a book called It's Okay to Be Different. Like, it's okay if you don't have hair, and like, it's okay if, and it's just like not beating you over the head with stuff, but it's like celebrate diversity. And I feel like my entertainment and education I want to consume, I want to learn about other people so much. And like the books and movies that are available to children right now are so incredible. Like, I just feel like giving my two daughters all these books, like celebrating diversity and normalizing differences. And instead of like staring at someone and pointing and people go, oh, don't look at them. Like, that's rude. To right. say to your child, smile and say hi. Like, I don't know if someone doesn't look like you or has a wheelchair. My brother and I have gone back and forth between this like golden rule thing, treat others how you want to be treated. But I feel like, because he's a logician and he has a philosophy degree, so he'll say like, what if you don't want to be treated that way? But I'm like, no, just like be good to them and make them feel welcome and make them feel right. seen. And
yeah, that's good. That does sound like a change from what I remember growing up. I think that was like, as far as like a liberal or like left leaning mindset went at the time, was like, no, don't talk about the like the differences that you're just supposed to kind of like just be fine with it and ignore it. And that's very different now.
My company had like a little coffee talk about race relations in America, and so many people said, oh, I'm not racist, I don't see color. And I'm like, hello, see their color and understand the struggle and who they are and their identity. Like, it doesn't help to say I don't see their color. It's not helpful.
Right, because a lot of people do see it and then treat them differently. So like, if you ignore that,
well, like growing up, I've always been super attracted to black guys, and I've always like been obsessed with black music. And like, I named my dog Otis after Otis Redding, and I'm like, I love the black community. But then I'm like, wait, am I helping them? Like, I've been really starting to think the past 2 months, like, I think the world is like, oh, racism isn't an issue, and we're like gaslighting the black community, and it's like, oh, we're friendly with them and the community and stuff, but it's literally not enough. It's like the black community have done everything they can. They've tried every way to try and just get the most basic rights. And we're like shooting them and saying, you're equal. And it's just like insane. So I feel like it's totally up to the people with the privilege, and it's like such a loaded word to say I have privilege, but I drive down the street and don't get afraid of like being shot by the police, being the wrong place and wrong time. And I've had coworkers say that I'm afraid of the police too, and I get nervous when I get pulled over. I'm like, it's not the same right. kind of nervous. Yeah. It's not the same. So I feel like we need to, like, the moms in Portland that are putting their bodies in front of people, like, and my whole thing, I feel like coming from a place of love and empathy and compassion is so important, because in 2016, I was so triggered and my energy was like, if I found out someone was supporting Trump, I was like, fuck you, go fuck up and die. And now I'm like, I thought, like, if I told someone, you're an asshole and blah, 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 that's not going to change their mind and who they're voting for. And they're not going to say, hey, I am an asshole. I am not being the best person I could be. Now I'm trying to say, what can I do to help that's coming from a place of love? So if somebody's parents disown them for being gay, like, I can be one of those moms who give hugs, and I can go out and love and support them. And
you know, when it comes to the race issue, it's white people, but like, and you know, everyone in like a privileged position right now, or many of us are starting to realize, like, it's not enough that I'm a nice person. there's like it's a lot more enough. And when you're talking about approaching people who like support Trump or, you know, don't understand these things, that's something that I've heard a lot of frustration from people of color, that like, we can't do all the work of like explaining this to white people. And a lot of the time, you know, like, it hasn't always been like my family members, but like a lot of the time they're like, look, like, these are white people. These are people in your family. Like, you need to approach them and talk about this. And, it's been, you know, mostly just like randos on the internet, but like, I've engaged a few people over these past few months to like, you know, try to do some of that work, and it's really exhausting. And maybe one out of every 50 is like, okay, I kind of see what you mean. Like, they don't fully come to my side, but they're like, you know, there's some movement made where you get through to someone, and once you get past their like angry facade, you're just like, there's a person to be reasoned with there. But like the rest, the other 49 are you know, really difficult.
And it's not that racist person chose to be racist on their own. Like, their family, like, I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do feel hopeful about our generation. And when I learned Obama was legalizing gay marriage because his two daughters convinced him, he was leaning like, oh, it's not necessary. And then Sasha and Malia were saying, Dad, it is. I feel like there's a lot of kids saying, Mom and Dad, wake up. Like, with my mom and dad, I talk to them every day, and I was saying how exhausting and sad it was reading the social media feeds of all the activists doing all the work. And I'd say, there's no disclaimer, like, don't view this image, it's upsetting. You just scroll and it's like a protester had their eyeball shot out, or there's like a child that was murdered. And it's just like, and they're saying, Claire, step away from it. Focus on your girls. That's all you can do. You can't do anything for them. I'm saying, no, I can, and I have to. Like, right. They are minorities, and they don't get to choose if they're going to shut it off. They're exhausted, like, so depleted and drained. Like, I have to take some of it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that's, I see that from my parents' generation. That's what that generation was sold, is that neoliberal sort of idea that, like, it just, like, focus on your life and everyone does their thing and then it's fine. It all works out. And it's like, it really doesn't. And it's we're seeing the effects of that generation just keep, you know, putting their nose to the grindstone and working their way up in the company. Like, this is where it leads.
Right. Well, when I was sent to Catholic school when I was younger, I remember, it's funny the word radical, because I saw a video of Mother Teresa going around and she would eat cat food off of cat plates to survive because she was just focused on taking care of the poor and sick. And I was like, wow, that's radical. That's shocking. That's awesome. And Princess Diana, like, taking off her ball gown and walking through the minefields, and like, she is my hero. And now it's like, I think it's like cool to be kind. Like, Lady Gaga's advocating for LGBT rights and speaking at events, and Natalie Portman and Rosario Dawson and canvassing. It's like, I mean, Greta with the climate change is like making it cool to be educated and passionate about social justice. So I think, like, I feel good, even though things are shitty and the world's on fire right now. Like, I feel there's a ton of goodness coming out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Gen Z goes hard. Like, they're really just going for it. I think it's for them, it's at a point where, like, the outlook is so bleak for them. Like, they're like, I don't know what the world's going to look like, you know, in 5 years, let alone like 20 or 30. So they just kind of go for it because they don't have anything to lose.
We don't want the apocalyptic world from The Road or Ready Player One, where it's trailers stacked on top of each other and there's no grass in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I've already learned, as like the somewhat older person from that generation. Just having their voices online, and it's like, Aiden Smith is a leftist guy I follow on Twitter, and he's probably like 10 years younger than me, and I remember him saying something like, this was kind of a while ago, but he said something about South Park and Family Guy and like this sort of like, you know, two decades old now, like series of comedy shows that my generation grew up with. And he said something about, like, can you imagine, like actually liking those things now? And I was like, interesting. Like, I think I was still kind of watching those regularly at the time. And I needed to be hit over the head with it and be like, Yeah, yeah, I think maybe we leave those in the past. I see where he's coming from.
I think the guys that made South Park, did they make Team America when Matt Damon was like using that funny voice? And it's like funny to watch back then, but now you're like, this makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, and that is the least of the problems.
Yeah, I like watching Saturday Night Live to figure out where like America feels about politicians and watching the Democratic debates be represented. And I mean, the way they treated Bernie Sanders and the way they treated Hillary Clinton, I'm like, this is fascinating. That's not really how I see them, but I guess that's how others can see them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a bit of an exaggeration, I guess. What's the name of the podcast?
Claire Kindness. So my name is C-L-A-R-E. And if people are interested in following Move On and groups like that, I totally will do that in my newsletter. I send it out to people. And Claire Kindness is the podcast.
Okay.
And if you like what NBC with Lester Holt, how the last 5 minutes they talk about the feel good story of the week and people that are doing good. And if you want that in your soul,
that's your whole show.
You should follow Claire Kindness. I have the most amazing people on my podcast, finding ways that it's their gift and they're sharing it with the world. So my last guest, Rhonda, Dr. Beeman, she created a nonprofit in SLO that's granting wishes for terminal patients that are adults. And it was really neat to hear how like her idea started and how like everyone in San Luis Obispo, she's asked for help granting wishes, has said yes. So yeah, I definitely think it's so important to follow activists in the news, to know, be in the know and be educated, but also to balance it out, bring that into your world about the next generation of Mr. Rogers and the next generation of people helping and loving and caring for each other, to add that to your 24 hours of your day is important.
Yeah. Yeah. The activists of the world are the ones kind of pushing us towards a new mindset. And that's where we should all be looking to see, like, you know, what, at least what direction to go.
And if you want to check out Dining for Women, they're such a neat group. You have chapters all over the world now in all sorts of countries. And we've collectively given $6 million to women and children around the world. So my thing is, I usually give like only $10, but if we all do that, the women and children are existing on less than a dollar a day. So $10 is like, hello, that helps.
Yeah.
I would say you could do virtual chapters wherever you are, diningforwomen.com, and then Claire Kindness on Apple and Spotify, and for sure, follow Radicalize Me for inspiration and education.
Oh, thank you for the plug within the show, too.
Oh, I enjoyed your show so much.
Oh,
and you guys are so funny. It's not just like dry, let's talk about politics. It's like so like, oh, yes. Like I.
Oh, I'm good.
Like,
thanks. I'm glad that comes through. Yeah, that's I try to bring my comedy background to it. And several of the guests are comedians as well as activists. So
I feel like I could learn much more from John Oliver or Trevor Noah than, you know, your last guest was talking about the tax policy, how it's like a telephone book.
Yeah.
And no one could digest that, but they can digest the information coming from you.
Yeah, that's important. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks.
I think you've given listeners some great resources. So
thanks, Joe. Yeah. I hope you have a great week. I'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks. You too.
Bye.
There it is, my talk with Claire Kennedy, aka Claire Kindness. Go listen to the Claire Kindness podcast and make sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to that show and this show. That's the best way to, you know, help us keep spreading this message, infiltrating new ears. All right, that's it. Go fuck shit up.